Okay, good morning, everyone. Let's begin. So the truth is, I'd like to spend one more week on Kapitel Samech Gimel. I know that this will now be our third week on the same Kapitel. But the truth is, upon looking at this a little bit further, so many ideas and so many motifs and so many thoughts, really so many streams of consciousness emanate from David HaMelech in the course of this one simple Kapitel, that it behooves us to spend one more week. So just a quick review. Over the last few weeks, so we've spoken about a couple of different themes. In our first week, we spoke about the concept of the Midbar, the concept of the desert. David HaMelech's desert, Hagar's desert, Eliyahu HaNavi's desert, the desert representing loneliness, the desert representing isolation, and what we do in those moments when we feel isolated and kind of excised, feel a bit on the periphery of life and the periphery of all that's going on around us. Last week, we spoke about the concept of Kitov Chastecha Mechayim, the chesed, the ultimate kindness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the greatest kindness that David HaMelech spoke about, the kindness that is even greater than life itself. That kindness, we explained, of course, was the kindness that God frees us from the need for perfection. We need not be perfect. We need not even be consistent. All HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks of us, ultimately, is to engage in effort, to engage in the battle, in the struggle, and to try. And as long as we try, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is perfectly content. This week, I want to work backwards a little bit in the Kapitel, and I want to draw your attention to the second verse in this particular chapter. So remember again, the Kapitel begins, Mizmor LeDavid, Biosoba Midbar Yehuda, Song of David, when he was in Midbar Yehuda. And Pasuk Beis, verse 2, is what we're going to focus ourselves on this morning. Elokim, God, Keli Ata, you are my God, Ashacharecha. So we're gonna spend time defining this word, Ashacharecha. So for now, we'll leave it undefined. Tzama lecha nafshi, my soul thirsts for you. Kama lecha bisari, my flesh longs for you. Be'eretz tzia, in an arid and thirsty land. Be'eretzia va'ayef, in an arid and thirsty land. Beli mayim, without water. So of course, on the most basic level here, so King David is continuing on the desert motif. The idea being that just like in the desert, a person lacks resources. So David HaMelech again saying, I'm yearning for you, I'm thirsty for you. And again, using the metaphor of the desert, same way the person traveling in the desert would give anything ultimately again for that little sip of water. So to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I long for you, I thirst for you. Rashi explains, I want to focus, today we're really going to focus on one word, which is that word, Ashacharecha. So Rashi understands in number two, Ashacharecha, Avakesh ve'edrosh lecha. Literally, I seek you out. I seek you. That's why, if you notice, the English translation you have on your page really brings in the opinion of Rashi. Oh God, you are my God. I seek you. I seek you. Rashi says, Ashacharecha, Avakesh. I request you. Ve'edrosh lecha. I seek you out. And he quotes Psukim from Eov. If you go to the second line in Rashi, Tzama lecha nafshi, my soul thirsts for you. Tzamei v'tayiv ani lava elecha beveis tefila secha. I'm thirsting for you, and I yearn to come into your home. Now, whether this home is a reference to the Beis HaMikdash, whether this home is a reference just to David HaMelech being back in his own home, Kama lecha besari, literally again, my flesh longs for you. Lashon taiva, it is a lashon, Rashi says, it is a wording, ultimately, of desire. Be'eretz siya, b'midbar in the desert. So according to Rashi, what's unfolding in this verse over here is as follows. David HaMelech saying that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm on the run. My life has been totally upended. I'm living in complete upheaval. And what I long for more than anything is I seek you. I seek you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I miss you. My relationship with you has been strained. My connection with you is not as it once was. I seek you out. Now the truth is that Rashi is telling us is something incredibly dramatic, which is sometimes we think that suffering brings us closer to God. So the truth is, sometimes it does, and sometimes it doesn't. Any person who's ever undergone any type of life suffering knows that suffering or trauma can have one of two effects. For some people, it drives them into the arms of God. Some people will tell you that, again, the closest I've ever felt to HaKadosh Baruch Hu are in times of distress. For other people, it has the reverse effect. Because sometimes in times of distress, in times of difficulty, I summon up all of my internal energy to keep my head above water, that I have absolutely no bandwidth for God. No bandwidth for God. No bandwidth for spirituality. Nothing for God. Nothing for religion. Nothing. I have to summon up all of my strength to keep my head above water. And this is incredibly important for a variety. First of all, it's important for us because sometimes when we experience stresses in life, and when I say trauma or tragedy, you know, those words are very relative. Right? Sometimes we think about those words in the extreme. But the truth is many of us suffer through trauma and difficulty day in and day out with some of the little things. You know, people have different thresholds for stress in life. You know, there are some people, everything, the sky is falling. And there are some people who, Baruch Hashem, like, are very resilient. The truth is, so it's not our place to judge people. People deal with different things in different ways. But sometimes when people are dealing with stress or difficulty, they don't feel connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And they think that is a lack of holiness in themselves. And the truth is, it's not necessarily that way. Sometimes when you're undergoing difficult times in life, a person has to channel all of their energy to staying afloat. And I have no energy left for anything else. No energy left for God. Sometimes I have no energy left for my marriage. I have no energy left for my children. I have no energy left for my friends, for my family. People deal with different things in different ways. I often tell people, because I hear people struggle with this a lot. People in the midst of difficulty and really traumatic, tragic circumstances. And there's a profound sense of guilt when a person feels disconnected from God. Here I'm struggling with this. I know I need HaKadosh Baruch Hu, yet I feel so disconnected. So the important thing to remember is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants more than anything for us and from us is to be happy and healthy people. So when a person is dealing with some type of trauma or some type of struggle, the goal is get well. The goal is keep yourself afloat. God is ridiculously patient. HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes, okay, you can't talk to me now. I'm patient. That is the one incredible advantage of being eternal, right? You have inexhaustible supply of patience. So you don't feel connected to me now. You don't feel inspired now. You don't feel like you want to dive in. You don't feel like you want to talk because you have to put all of your energies to keeping yourself afloat. It's okay. Put all of your energies into being a healthy, happy person. And when you're ready to re-engage, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always there. Rashi's telling us that this was the experience of David HaMelech. Meaning you would have thought that David HaMelech's relationship with God was stronger than ever. After all, remember again, what else or who else does he have to rely on? Everyone has turned against him. The only thing David HaMelech has in his corner is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And yet, what is he telling us? This wording over here is, I seek you. I seek you. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is everywhere. I long for you. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is everywhere. What David HaMelech's Rashi tells us, is teaching us, is that sometimes in the midst of difficult times in life, my relationship with God becomes challenged as well. Sometimes, and this is so incredibly important, you know, we sometimes have a very flawed understanding of what it means to be a connected Jew. We think that what it means, and I'm not going to use even the word from or the word because those words aren't always good. What does it mean to be a connected Jew? So we think being a connected Jew means I'm always inspired. I'm always connected. I'm always great with God. Almost no one has a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu like that. Relationship with God are just like every other life relationship. A person could have a wonderful marriage. And a person could say, you know what? I feel so blessed that this is my partner in life. And then there are days when you think to yourself, what the heck happened, right? What's going on over here, right? That's life. And again, does that mean that I'm any less in love with my spouse? Or there are days where I am enamored by my children? And there are days that I want to say, what did I do wrong as a parent? that would have brought this catastrophe upon me, right? Where did I go wrong that all this occurred? Does it mean I love my kids any less, my spouse any less? No, that's the nature of relationships. Every relationship has peaks and valleys. Every relationship has good times and bad times. And sometimes we have this very unfair expectation of ourselves that our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's always a peak. It's always a peak. It's always inspirational. It's always wonderful. And it's always loving. And it's always great. And I feel God's arms around me. And He feels my arms around Him. There are days like that. And there are days when I say to myself, I'm just not feeling it. I'm just not feeling it. I want to feel it. I'd love to feel it. I'd love to be engaged. But I just don't. And the solace in this is, David HaMelech had those days also. Right? Because remember, again, here he's alone. There's no one else but David and God. He's in the middle of the desert. There's literally no one else. He's lost his wife. He's lost his family. He's lost his people. He's lost everything. Remember, David HaMelech is looked at as a traitor. There's no one else but HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And yet David HaMelech says, I just feel a little bit disconnected. I don't know what it is, but I don't feel it. It's not that he's angry at God for what's happened. It's not that he's saying, why did you do this to me? I just don't feel the connectedness right now, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So David HaMelech teaching us, sometimes it's okay. Relationships wax and wane. They have peaks and valleys. There are moments of incredible passionate connectedness, and then there are moments where it's like, okay. And that's okay. Our human relationships are like that, and our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is like that. The goal, of course, what's the goal in any relationship? What's the goal? The goal is to come out of the valley, right? Remember again, where relationships fail, the fact that relationships have peaks and valleys, that we all know. Where relationships fail and fall apart is when people enter into a valley and they do nothing to get themselves out. That's where marriages fall apart, that's where relationships with children fall apart, and that's where relationships with the Kaddish Baruch Hu fall apart as well. To get into the valley is par for the course. To remain in the valley is a profound failure. The Malbim goes on and he says in number 3, Elokim, Ya'an asher eliyata shacharecha, rak oscha ashacher ve'edrosh tzama. So according to the Malbim, the message is a little bit different. The message of David HaMelech, which is a message that is repeated throughout many of the Kapitlach, is as follows. We've mentioned this before. If there is one thing that you could count on in every single one of your human relationships, it is what? Disappointment. I know that sounds terrible, right? But it's a very real way to look. See, sometimes when people expect everything to be perfect, and then the moment that it's not perfect, they think the sky is falling. I think I mentioned this before. I had once met with a chassan and kala who came to me during Sheva Brachas. And so usually when I get a call during Sheva Brachas, I always get a little bit nervous. It's an emergency. We have to meet with you. So I meet with them. I say, what's wrong? And the wife begins to cry, bawling. They're 2 days after their chassan. So also everybody's a little bit sleep deprived, a little bit on edge. I said, what happened? She said, we had a fight. I said, yeah, and? We had, and like, you know, it's like, you know, like when the sobbing and the guy, you know, like it's like, the, like we had a fight. I was, okay, so what happened? What happened? And it was incredible. This wonderful young girl was devastated that she had a fight with her husband during Sheva Brachas, meaning we never even got to what the fight was about. She was so crestfallen that they had a fight. So I had to really restrain my. I wanted to like chuckle a little bit and say, oh, so cute. Right? But I realized it would be the wrong response under those circumstances. But I want to tell you something amazing. Whoever educated this couple did them an incredible disservice, because someone painted a picture for them of a marriage that, what's the perfect marriage? You know, everyone likes the perfect marriage. Everybody quotes the story with Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, and his wife. They went to the doctor, right? Ms. Rebbetzin Auerbach was having leg problems. The doctor said, what's wrong? And Rav Shlomo Zalman said, our leg hurts, right? Beautiful, beautiful. Do you think the Auerbach Zichronim Livracha never had a disagreement? Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was a Gadol Hadar. he was also a human being. I guarantee you he had disagreements with his wife. I guarantee you, right? So it's amazing that what was incredible to me is that someone had painted a picture to this young couple that a good marriage means one where you don't fight, one where you don't disagree. The only marriage where you don't fight with your spouse, I don't know what marriage you don't fight with your spouse, but meaning maybe if you're not married, you don't fight with your spouse. I guess that's the only construct I could understand. But this idea that sometimes we create this expectation of perfection in our relationship. So again, Rashi's coming along to saying, even David HaMelech and the same relationships aren't perfect. The Malbim says David HaMelech has a different epiphany. And this is a theme you see over and over in Tehillim. David HaMelech is profoundly disappointed with his human relationships. Why? Because everyone he knows at some point in time has failed him. Right? His wife, now the truth is his wife didn't fail him. His wife was in a ridiculous situation of allegiance to her father or allegiance to her husband, and recognizing that her father, King Shaul, was in a very bad state of mind. She helps her husband escape, but she cannot go with him. Truth is, David HaMelech didn't want her to come with him. She couldn't come with him. He couldn't run the way that he ran with her. So his marriage is gone. His father-in-law, who was once his greatest supporter, is gone. Right? We spoke about David HaMelech's dynamic with his families. So David HaMelech has this epiphany. There's only one life relationship I can count on, and it is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is the only life relationship you could take to the bank. The only life relationship that will always be there. Human relationships come and go. Human relationships are sometimes good, sometimes they're not so good. But the one stable relationship. Now again, to be clear, does it mean that HaKadosh Baruch Hu always does what I want? Of course not. Or when I want, or how I want? Of course not. But that's not the litmus test of the relationship. The idea of the relationship with God is it represents a consistency. HaKadosh Baruch Hu never leaves my side. Even in those moments where I think He might leave my side, spiritually, theologically, I know that He's always by my side. So according to the Malbim, David HaMelech says, Elokim, Keliata, You are my God. You are the only relationship I have that I could bank on in this world. Tzama lecha nafshi, I yearn for you because you're the only person, you're the only entity, not person, you're the only entity that is always by my side. David HaMelech gives us an incredible window. What does it mean to have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? The gift of a relationship with God is the gift of a consistent relationship. No one could guarantee consistency or longevity in their marriage. No one could guarantee consistency or longevity in your relationship with your children, your relationship with your parents, your friends, your siblings. Rahman al-Islam, those relationships come and go. There is only one consistent relationship in life. And that is HaKadosh. I'm sorry? It's always there. It's always there. I might not like what God does. I might not agree with what God does. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always by my side. That relationship never goes anywhere. This is very important. I want to be clear. Consistency doesn't mean I'm always happy with it. Consistency doesn't mean everything goes my way. Consistency doesn't mean that things unfold the way I want them to unfold. But consistency means HaKadosh Baruch Hu never leaves my side. That is the gift of a relationship with God. There is no other relationship in this world that is like that. All other relationships have the capacity to come and go. Our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the only one that you could say is yours forever. Now, the reason why this is important, what is David HaMelech trying to teach us? If it's true that my relationship with God is a relationship ultimately that is eternal and consistent, it tells us about the need to invest in that relationship. We all know about investment in relationships, right? We all know that in our human relationships, you get out what you're willing to put in. And even if you don't get out what you're willing to put in, if you want meaningful relationships in life, you have to ask yourself, what are you investing? You know, and this is a little bit countercultural, because in the society, really greater society in which we live, everything in life is about what do I get out? What do I get from this? What do I get from this? So the truth is, if you want to build relationships, that form of thinking undermines the fabric of every life relationship. If you want meaningful relationships in life, what are you willing to invest? Of course, you have to get something back as well. You know, I often say, when you go to Sheva Brachas, I always have a lot of fun listening to people talk at Sheva Brachas because everybody suddenly becomes like the marriage guru, right? Everyone is right. So the guy who's speaking is the chassan's friend who's been married 14 minutes longer than the chassan, right? But he's going to give these pearls of wisdom, right? And so again, what's the number one Sheva Brachas Vart? The number one, of course, is Ava. The Shoresh of Ava mean is Hav, to give. And marriage is all about giving and not getting. And everyone is looking at this guy when he's talking, and they're smiling beautiful. And what are they thinking in their mind? You're an idiot. meaning that is fundamentally untrue. Any relationship that's just about giving and getting nothing in return, unless you're a tzaddik, which I'm sure all of you are, Nashim Tzidkanios, that relationship doesn't last. It doesn't last. Meaning everybody, there's a give and there's a get. So the difference in good, meaningful relationships is I don't measure what I give based on what I get. So in other words, there's not a tit for tat. There doesn't have to be a reciprocity. It doesn't have to be, you know, I gave you X, so you have to give me back X. That's when relationships fall apart. But a recognition that, of course, I want things out of my life relationships, but I'm willing to invest so much more than I need to take out. That's the goal. So David HaMelech is telling us over here, there's only one life relationship in this world that is consistent, that you will always have, and it's your relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So what are you investing in it? What do we invest in our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So many times our relationship with God is utilitarian relationship that is based on this simple idea. It's an Ava HaTuluya B'davar, right? I need stuff. I need stuff, and I recognize that my health comes from God. My parnasa comes from God. My relationships come from God. My children come from God. So I need to go ahead and stay good with God in order that He keeps giving me all of brachos. And that is a level. There's no question. That is a level. Even though it's called Ava Teluya B'davar, love that is dependent on something, that is still a level. When a person recognizes that all they have is from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and so I need to be good with God because everything I have is from Him, that's incredible. But there's a higher level. And the higher level is, I want a relationship. I want a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And I don't want just a platonic relationship. I want a meaningful, passionate relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So what am I willing to invest? It's an interesting question to ask ourselves, right? Ask yourself, looking back now to the beginning of today, yesterday, how did I invest in my relationship with God? I can answer, how did I invest in my marriage, right? These are the things I did for my marriage. These are the things I did for my kids. These are the things I did for my friends. How did I invest in my relationship with God? And the investment always has to be something quantifiable. The investment could be, you know what? I went out of my way to daven with a bit more kavana. The investment could be, I went out of my way to do an extra act of chesed. The investment could be, I worked on myself just a little bit more to perfect that negative nagging character trait that I have. You know, that nagging thing that's been plaguing me all of these years. Whatever it is. But what did you invest? Because when you have an eternal relationship with the divine, when you have an eternal relationship, the only consistent relationship that a person could actually bank on for all 120 years is your relationship with the Kaddish Baruch Hu. If that's what I have, then I have to figure out a way to invest in it. Rav Sham Shlomo Hirshen number 4 says something a little bit different. Rav Hirsch actually says something very beautifully. Rav Hirsch understands, and I'll tell you what's amazing on this kapitel, and I think why I'm having difficulty kind of moving on from it a little bit, which is, you know, something interesting happens in the Midbar. What occurs in the Midbar that's unique? What occurs is as follows. You know, sometimes in the course of life, we become so busy. Well, all of us are busy with just day-to-day life. And when you're busy with day-to-day life, what don't you have the ability to do? To think. Right? Isn't it an incredible thing? Sometimes, when do you do your best thinking? Best thinking? I'm sorry? Middle of the night, or sometimes a person goes even on vacation for a little bit of time. And like when you stop your routine, that's suddenly when you begin to think, like, what am I doing? Where am I going? What am I working on? What do I want to do? What do I want to be? All these different things. So I think it's incredibly profound that David HaMelech is having these epiphanies where? In the desert. You see, before he had to flee to the desert, what was he doing? He was a general. He was a husband. He was pretty much running the army for King Shaul. So there was not time. There was no downtime. David HaMelech is now in the desert. He's alone with himself. And when he's alone with himself, suddenly again, there is this incredible ability to think about who I am, what I am, the life that I'm living. Which is why, by the way, you know that in Chassidus, there is an incredible emphasis on hisbodidus, of taking time to be alone with oneself. We've spoken about this in other shiurim, right? The need to somehow extract myself from the daily grind, even if it's just for a few minutes, to be able to think about life. Because when you're acting, and when you're juggling the various balls of day-to-day life, it's difficult to really think about life. So David HaMelech, so look what Rav Hirsch says. Number four. Rav Hirsch writes, Elohim, keli ato. O God of the universe, thou art my God. So Rav Hirsch writes, thou art my God. Also says David, thou art not impersonal. Thy walking eye and thy devoted love is with every creature that dwells in thy world. Every living thing may call thee its own God, even as I call thee my God. So if Hirsch makes two dramatic points. Point number one is David HaMelech doesn't just say Elohim, right, God, but rather what does he say? Keli ato. You are my God. You are my God. That ultimately, again, I don't just have a relationship with general God, but I have a relationship with personal God. We discussed this, I think, also in a different capital, this idea that our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu really exists on two levels. We relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as God of Israel, God of humanity, God of the universe, but then each of us forges our own unique relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, if you look, by the way, just skip for just a moment to number five. So if you notice again, this is what we do at the very beginning of Shemona Esrei. Remember, Shemona Esrei begins with the bracha of Avos. Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu v'Elokei Avosinu, Elokei Avram, Elokei Yitzchak v'Elokei Yaakov. Why do we begin with the mentioning of the patriarchs? Why do we begin with Avos? So there's a variety of different reasons, right? Shemona Esrei, again, the primary essence of Shemona Esrei is you're familiar with Shemona Esrei. Good, right? Right? The primary asset is bakashas, requests. Shemona Esrei is all about requests. That's what it's about. It's just that it doesn't look right to launch into requests immediately. So we begin with one section, we end with a different section, but the essence are the middle section of requests. That's Shemona Esrei. So why do we begin with the bracha of Avos? So there are many different answers. One idea is that ultimately, again, I may not possess the requisite merits to get what I need from God. So therefore, I say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I come to you not just with my own merits, but with the merits of my ancestors as well. Elokei Avram, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov. Second possibility is that I come before you, God, and I'm a bit humbled because maybe I don't have a right to ask you for all the things I need in life. But I'm not cold calling you. I am the child of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, with whom you had a long-standing relationship. I am their child, and it's with that identity that I come before you. But Rav Hirsch actually says something so dramatically beautiful. He says, Elokei Avram, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov. So we group them together as the Avos. But if we notice, again, we all know, this is just from reading Chumash, which is each of them had a dramatically different relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, in certain respects, were, I don't want to say polar opposite personalities, but so dramatically different from one another. The difference is most pronounced between who? Avram and Yitzchak. Right? Avram's whole life was devoted to the masses. Yitzchak was not like that. Yitzchak, the Gemara says, was an Ola Tamima, was a consecrated sacrifice. Yitzchak never leaves the land of Israel. In fact, this week's parasha, when he's ready to leave, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him, no, you can't leave. You're sanctified. We don't see Yitzchak going all over the place. It doesn't ever says, Hanefesh Asher Asu. Yitzchak and Rivka were not converting the masses like Avram and Sarah. Yitzchak, so Avram, represented this ideal of changing the world. Yitzchak represented the ideal of what? changing yourself. Yaakov becomes the synthesis of the two. Yaakov represents this impact of changing the world and changing yourself and bridging this gap. Refers to something amazing. We begin Shmon Esrei, and we're all about to say the same words. And yet, how do we open up the bracha? Elokei Avram, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov. Just as each of the patriarchs and matriarchs were fundamentally different people, we may all say the same words, but each of us has a different relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it is our job in our Yiddishkeit to find that unique relationship, to nurture that unique bond. We all know it exists because the truth is we have different life experiences. So once you have different life experiences, that means that you perceive and you relate and you interact with God in different ways. Our job on one hand is to nurture that communal bond. We all have a bond with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who is our God, God of Am Yisrael, God of humanity, God of the universe. But simultaneously, I have to nurture that personal bond as well. Says the first, that's what David HaMelech is saying. Elohim, you are God, but you're not just general God. Keli Ata. You are my personal God as well. I have a personal relationship with you that I have to nurture, that I have to nourish. But then Rav Hirsch goes on, and this is incredible. Ashacharecha. He says, Shachar. Now this is very interesting. So up until now, both Rashi and the Malbim have, back to number four, fourth line down to number four. Everyone has translated Ashacharecha as what? Seeking out God. Elohim, Kiliato Ashacharecha, I will seek you out. Rav Hirsch says that doesn't appear to be etymologically correct. He says something amazing. Ashacharecha, Shachar is the search for an object which is not spatially distant from us, but which we cannot see because it is still dark. Shachar, Shachor, also means black. Therefore, Shachar, and usually Alosa Shachar, denotes the time when Laila, the complete interwovenness of objects, the night, begins to depart. Boker, the time of complete distinctive perception, has not yet come. It is no longer so dark that it would be impossible to search for an object, as it would be in the middle of the deepest night. But it is still not light enough for the human eye to discern an object without searching for it, namely daybreak or dawn. So first of all, this is incredible. So we know that even in halacha, there's a kind of alosa shachar. We translate alosa shachar as dawn. Dawn, as opposed to netzachama, which means sunrise. Right? When the sun rises, it's light. If you ever go outside at dawn, it's still dark. So interesting, Rav Hirsch says, what does alos hashachar mean, the etymological? He says, really, it's alos hashachor. It is when the blackness, the darkness, begins to lift away. It's still dark, but the darkness is receding. There's a little bit of light, but the rest of the light is sure to follow. Rav Hirsch says something absolutely amazing. With reference to God, therefore, Shachar means to search for God, of whose presence one is convinced, but whose nearness one would wish to perceive in the midst of sad, dark days. Says Rav Hirsch something absolutely amazing. David HaMelech is saying something so different. Elohim, Keliato, I know you're my God, and I know that you love me, and I know that you know that I love you, but Ashacharecha, I feel like I'm searching for you in the darkness. I know that you're here, but I cannot find you. I know that you're close, but I cannot feel you. My heart and my mind tell me about the reality of your existence and the reality of your closeness. But I'm like a person reaching around in the shachor, in the darkness, in the black. I know that you're here, but yet for some reason I cannot feel your closeness. He goes on, Tsama, that's the rest of the pasuk. Tsama lecha nafshi, even though my soul is in the midst of arid barrenness and faint with thirst, it still thirsts for thee, and my flesh yearns for thee alone, rather than for some physical nourishment. For David declares, my soul and even my flesh senses that in all its distress and grief will be at an end once I have found thee. So Rav Hirsch understands. Go back up to number one now for just a moment. Let's look at the pasuk according to Rav Hirsch. So Elohim, it's a declaration to say, Hu, you are my God. And not just universal God, Kiliyata. I feel a personal connection, a personal relationship with you. But despite all of that, Ashacharecha, you're clouded, you're shrouded in the darkness, in the Shachor. I know that you're here, but I can't find you. I know that you're close, but I cannot feel you. And all I want is Tzama Lecha Nafshi. All my soul does is thirst for you. Kama lecha besari. My flesh longs for you. Be'eretz tzia. Because I'm all alone in a barren land. Va'ayef b'li mayim. And I'm tired and without resources. So says Rav Hirsch, David HaMelech, giving verbal expression to one of the most greatest theological challenges. I know intellectually and spiritually that you're here, but I cannot feel you. I know that you're close, yet I cannot perceive you. If you take a look at number six, there was an incredible Jewish poet by the name of Shlomo Ibn Gabiro. Shlomo Ibn Gabiro wrote many of the piyutim that I think probably most times these piyutim are no longer said, but he also wrote an incredible amount of poetry. So Ibn Gabiro lives in Iberia from 1021. So it's actually this historical debate if he died at the age of 38 or if he died at the age of 50. Either way, he died as a young man, but was clearly an incredibly wise scholar and a prolific writer. So in a poem titled Keser Malchus, in number 7, Ibn Gabiro writes something that is so profound. He says, Im tivakesh la'avoni, God, if you seek my sins, Evrach mimecha eilecha. Mimecha eilecha. He says, I will run away from you towards you. Ve'eskase mechamascha bitzilecha. And I will hide from your anger in your shade. Ibn Gabiro writes this phrase, and this phrase has been borrowed many times. Mimecha eilecha. I run from you, but I run towards you. From you to you, from you to you. There's this dialectic in our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that there are times that I want to run away from God because I may not be happy with the things that God is doing to me. But where do you run away from God? There's only one place to run away from God, which is to God. Says Ibn Gabiro, because there's this incredible recognition that even in those times when I feel so forsaken and so alone, I know that the only recipe for success in life is with you. Mincha, I run from you, but then I run right back to you. The Baal Shem Tov in number 7, Chassidus also talks about this concept, but calls it a little bit differently. Calls it something a little bit different. Borrowing from the Pasuk in Yecheskel, the Chassidus terms this as Ratza Vishov. Life is a constant movement forward and backwards. Forward and backwards. Mimecha, right? Mimcha, mimecha, eilecha. To you, from you. To you, from you. Back, forward, right? Right, forward, backwards. David HaMelech, says Rav Hirsch, is giving words to this dynamic. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I know you're here, but I don't feel you. I feel forsaken, yet I know you would never leave me. I feel close, yet I feel so far. I feel connected, yet I'm wondering why it is that you're doing this to me. So this goes back a little bit to what we were talking about before, which is the nature of our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Sometimes we have an expectation that our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always supposed to be up here. It's always supposed to be solid, on solid ground. And we're never supposed to struggle, and we're never supposed to slide backwards or run away. David HaMelech says, that's life. You know, I had a shidduch phone call yesterday from someone. Generally, I dread these phone calls because it seems to be that shidduchim today are more like sociological experiments than an effort to actually get married, with the number of questions that are asked. And the person asked me, a wonderful young lady, the mother asked me, did she struggle with her Yiddishkeit in high school? So I wanted to say, I mean, I don't know, but of course, who doesn't struggle with their Yiddishkeit? So this lady says to me, I don't struggle with my Yiddishkeit. I said, you know, you should be my Rebbe. Because I don't know how you do it, because I struggle with my Yiddishkeit every single day. Not a day goes by that I don't have a struggle with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Not a day goes by that I don't have a struggle with my Yetzirah. Not a day goes by that I engage in battles, many of which I lose. Many of which I lose. The struggle is part of the relationship. Our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and this goes back to what we learned last week as well, there's always the Ratzah V'Shov. There's always the forward and the backwards. There's always ultimately, again, the Mincha Eilecha, to you and away from you. There's always the Elokim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kiliyata, HaShacharecha. I can't find you. I can't find you. I know you're here. I know you're somewhere in the darkness, but I can't figure out exactly where you are. And by the way, there are different reasons why David HaMelech can't find God. Sometimes it's because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not allowing himself to be felt. And other times it might be because David HaMelech drifted off too far away to feel God. There are different reasons we don't feel HaKadosh Baruch Hu throughout life. Sometimes it's because God is hiding himself from us. Sometimes it's because we're hiding ourselves from God. But such is the nature of our relationship with the Ribono Shel Olam. So says Rav Hirsch, Ashacharecha, Ashacharecha, ultimately means what? I'm looking for you. But why are you in the dark? Why can't I find you? Why can't I feel you? I know that you're there. Because you know, in life, you could know something intellectually, theologically, and even spiritually, but you may not feel it emotionally. David HaMelech says, I have no doubts about your presence, but I have difficulty feeling it. Ashacharecha, the Ratzah V'Shov, the Mincha Eilecha. But I want to share with you one last approach. And for this, we're going to look at the parasha for just a moment. Take a look. And again, I always want to point out, all of this is focusing on one word. Ashacharecha. What does it mean? So again, remember, we have Rashi in the Baal Mitzvah, Ashacharecha means to seek out. We have Rav Hirsch understanding, no, Ashacharecha really is from Lashon of Shachor, of darkness. It means seeking out, but it means seeking out in the darkness, trying to find HaKadosh Baruch Hu when HaKadosh Baruch Hu seems to be so obscured and so hidden. But look at number 8. Pasuk, opening pasuk in this week's parasha. Vayetzi Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva, Sheva vayelech Harana. Yaakov Avinu left Be'er Sheva, and he went to Haran. So Rashi already points out in number 10, Lo hayotzarech lichtov ela vayelech Yaakov Harana. There seems to be a scriptural redundancy. Remember, so the verse says, Yaakov left Be'er Sheva, and he went to Haran. So Rashi says, I don't need the first part of the verse. I don't need that. That's not necessary for me. Right? Because remember, again, we know where Yaakov was living. They were living in Be'er Sheva. He's leaving the familial home. We already learned about that in last week. That's the whole debacle with what happened with Yaakov and Esav. We know that he's running away from home. The only piece of information that I need is what? Is to know ultimately, again, where Yaakov Avinu is going. So it comes along the Beis HaLevi in number 11 and says something amazing. The Beis HaLevi writes, "Vayitzi Yaakov Be'er Sheva Yelech Harano." Od Yesh Lomar. This is incredible. De Bechol Adam Hayotze Mimakom Lomakom. Whenever you go from point A to point B, from one place to another, Yesh Bazeh Ofanim, says the Beis HaLevi, there are different ways to take a journey in life. O De Iker Tachliso Hi Hayitzia Mimakom Arishon Mishum Ezasiba. Sometimes you just have to leave where you are for some particular reason. Sometimes, you just have to leave the place you are. The destination is not even all that important. I know that I just have to get out of these current circumstances. other times, omishum, b'tarech lios b'makom hasheni v'zeo ikr tachlis ha-kavan al-sabalicha. Or sometimes, no. The goal is I have to get to point B. That's the goal. Point A is just fine. I have to get to point B. So ultimately, again, how do I go there? That's my goal. Point A is just fine, but I have to travel because I have an intended destination. The Beis Halevi then goes on to explain that, interestingly enough, Yaakov felt that he got conflicting mandates from his parents. Right? His mother told him, just go. I don't care where you go. Just go. Your life is in danger. Your brother wants to kill you. Yitzchak gave him a much more directed command, a mandate. I want you to get married. I want you to go back to our familiar home, to Haran, and find a wife there. So the Beis Halevi says, the Pasuk's coming along to teach you this idea that Yaakov Avinu, in his greatness, wanted to honor both of his parents. And therefore, what does the Pasuk say? Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva. He left Be'er Sheva, right? The goal was the Be'er Sheva, in accordance with whose wishes? Rifka's. He was mechabit his mother, Mama, I'm leaving because you want me to leave. Vayelech Harana. And he goes to Haran in deference to who? Deference to his father Yitzchak. But the Beis Halevi is teaching us something so profound, which is our journeys in life take on one of two forms. Sometimes I'm running away from something, and sometimes I'm running to something. Now they're both legitimate journeys. Sometimes I just have to get away from where I am. And by the way, this is not necessarily a geographic statement. This applies emotionally and spiritually. Sometimes I just need to get out of this current circumstance. I don't care where I go, right? I just have to leave here. Other times, here is fine, but there is even better. There are two different types of journeys we take in life. Sometimes the goal is just to get away from where I am. Sometimes the goal is to get to where I need to be. The Beis Halevi sensitizes us to be consciously aware of the journeys you're taking. Because sometimes people think that they're going there, but they're really just running away from here. And if you're really just running away, then the truth is you spend most of your life running from here to here to here to here. And I want to be clear, sometimes you have to run. Sometimes you do have to run. Sometimes the goal is just extricate yourself from negative circumstances because it's just toxic and bad. And it doesn't matter where I go, I just can't be here. Sometimes here is fine, but there is even better. Just be consciously aware why you run in life. Right? You see people like this who are always on to this dream, this initiative, this project, this. And really what they're not dealing with is a profound unhappiness inside. And they think they'll run here, I'll be happy. I'll run here, I'll be happy. I'll do this, I'll experience this, I'll be happy. But they're just running away often from internal demons. And the incredible part about running away from internal demons is those demons are faster than you will ever be. So wherever you go, they will always be there before you. So in life, be consciously aware of why you're taking your journeys. If you're running from something, name the demon. What is it that you're running from? Do you really have to run from it? Or can you deal with it? Take your stand right here and right now. If you can't, then you just have to extricate, then run. Or am I running because this is just fine, but I could be the better version of myself over there? It says, that says the Beis Halevi is a take-home message. But another Rav Hirsch number 12, says something dramatically amazing. And this Rav Hirsch will link this back to the kapitel, with this will conclude. Rav Hirsch writes, he says, although it is already said above, Padena Aram, nevertheless, it still begins again with Jacob's leaving the parental home, because that introduces the independent life of Jacob. If Avraham, listen to this idea, is the root of the Jewish people, Isaac the growth towards the trunk, Jacob is the real trunk itself. That is also why Isaac said to him, V'itein lecha birchas Avraham. For Jacob, Yaakov, is the one who was to give the heritage of name and history to the future nation. We are not called the people of Abraham, but Israel, right? Bnei Yisrael, from Yaakov Avinu. So we see Jacob carrying out a second Lech Lecha. This is such an amazing insight. Says Rav Hirsch, Yaakov Avinu's departure from the familial home to the house of Lavan was another Lech Lecha. But what's the drama of it? It's a reverse Lech Lecha. Right, Avram's Lech Lecha was from outside the land of Israel to Canaan. Yaakov's Lech Lecha was from Canaan outside the land of Israel. You see, we see him, our nearest ancestor, for the same history which had been worked up from Avram to Isaac, also going away into isolation. But nevertheless, in quite a different manner to that of Avram. True, Avram went away from his homeland into isolation, but he went with his household, with wife and entourage, relations and fortune. But we see Jacob driven by different by circumstances, going away without anything at all to take with him. He preferred to leave everything behind him to his brother, so that he could see that in the matter of the Bechora, there was no question at all of material advantage. Jacob went away to found a Jewish house, a Jewish home. And for that, he takes nothing with him but himself. That which lies in his own personality. That is the fact that is introduced here for everything which follows is concerned with the establishment of the house. So listen to what Rav Hirsch says. Yaakov Avinu is engaging in a dramatic Lech Lecha. It's almost an opposite Lech Lecha of Avram. Avram, remember, Lech Lecha for Avram was the first, according to many, first of the 10 tests. What was the test? Leave everything you know and venture into an unknown land. He's not even told which land he's going to. What's the advantage of Avram's Lech Lecha? Avram, first of all, gets to go to Eretz Canaan, right? He's going not to a land, but he's going to the land. He goes with his beloved Sarah. He brings his family. Even Terach, his father, begins the journey with them. Lot is there with them. Who else travels with them? Es hanefesh asher asu b'charan. Right? All of the people he converted, they travel with a mini community. Avram Avinu already has a name. Avram Avinu already has money. Not at all diminishing the importance and the profundity of Avram's Lech Lecha. But what's Yaakov's Lech Lecha? Yaakov's Lech Lecha is leave the safety and security of the family home. Leave the spiritual cocoon of the land of Israel. Go out into a hostile environment. And what are you taking with you? What are you taking with you? Self. Nothing. Only yourself. To which Rav Hirsch says, do you know what the power of the lesson of Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Shava? Vayelech Harana? That all you need to be successful in life are the tools you already possess. Yaakov Avinu teaches us that everything you need to be successful in the trials and tribulations of life, you already have within. You see, we think that over the course of life, we have to acquire different tools for our emotional, spiritual, theological toolbox. I need resiliency. I need this. I have to acquire this. I have to acquire that. Yaakov Avinu teaches us Kadosh Baruch Hu pre-programmed us. Anything and everything I need, I already possess. I might have to find it. I might have to access it. I might have to engage in the process of self-discovery. But Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva. Yaakov Avinu goes in and leaves everything he knew. Vayelech Harana. He ventures into a new land all by himself, with nothing but himself. To highlight the idea, Avram was great. Avram was incredible. But Avram Avinu, again, went with a lot of trappings of life. That's what allowed him to be successful. Yaakov teaches us, even if you have nothing external, everything you need to be successful in life, you already possess within. That is the power of the Lech Lecha. That's why when we encounter challenges in life, and whatever the challenge is, big or small, and those challenges often seem insurmountable. You know, sometimes people say the cliche thing that God never gives you a challenge you can't handle. I don't know if that's true. I think HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us challenges that we have a choice whether we handle it or not. Some things I can't handle, but not handling something is a choice. It's a choice I make. It's not a reality. Because whatever situation I face in life, one thing is unequivocally clear. Whatever I need to deal with it, I possess within. I might make a choice not to deal with it. I might make a choice not to access the inner tools I possess. And as a result, I will be unable to deal with this challenge. But anything and everything you need to be successful in life, HaKadosh Baruch Hu already implanted inside of you. And perhaps, I'm sorry? When you from the beginning, I don't know when he does it, but he does it. Don't ask questions on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. A little bit of emunah. I'm kidding. So at some point, whether born part of our DNA, I don't know when it is, but it's there. It's there. So perhaps this is what David HaMelech was saying as well. Go back to number one for just a moment. Perhaps this is a different interpretation of Ashach Arecha. David HaMelech says again in Pasuk Beis, Elokim, Keiliyata, you are my God. Ashach Arecha. You know, I want to tell you something. When I read this pasuk, because I, like many of you, when you read Tehillim, it's sometimes difficult to know what it's actually saying. So the truth is, I thought Rashi and the Malbim, I was surprised when I saw them translated as Ashach Arecha means seek out. That would not, how would you, what word would you assume Ashach Arecha initially means? So Shachar, Rav Hirsch seems to, what else? So for me, I don't know why, but when I read it, I saw the word in there, shichrur, which means to free, to emancipate, to emancipate. So perhaps David HaMelech is saying like this, Elohim, Keiliyata, you are my God, Ashach Arecha, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I hereby emancipate you, and I hereby free you. What does that mean? David HaMelech is saying, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I realize that I have to take ownership of my life. I cannot place the full responsibility for my existence in your hands. I am the captain of the ship, metaphorically. I am the one who steers the course of my destiny. Of course, nothing happens without HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But this David HaMelech is saying is that sometimes the mistake we make in life is we yield the reins to God. God, take care of it. Take care of it. You're God. You could do anything. You could fix it. And sometimes there are times in life where you have to do that. But when do you do that? When do you do that? After you've exhausted your hishtadlus. After you've done what you can do to fix your circumstances. After you've done what you can do to better your plight. After you've put in your effort, then you have the right to say, God, I did my piece. My reach only extends so far. Now the rest is up to you. David HaMelech is sitting in Midbar Yehuda. He has lost everything in life. So the most tempting thing to do for David HaMelech is what? Is what? Think about it. You're King David. What are you going to do? Give up. If I was King David, I would curl up into a ball, light a fire in the cave, curl up into a ball, and wait. I can't deal with this anymore. This is ridiculous. My whole life has come down, crashing down on me, and I've done nothing wrong. If anything, I've done everything you've asked in every way that you've asked, and I've always answered your call. I'm done. If you want to change things, God, you need to take the reins, you need to do it. And what does David HaMelech do in that moment of desperation? Ashach Arecha, I free you. I free you, God. I emancipate you, God. I will take the reins. I long for you, Tzamalecha Nafshi. I hope that you'll step in. I hope that you'll intervene. I'm in the middle of the wilderness. My flesh longs for you. I'm exhausted. I have no water. I'm at the end of my rope. Ashach Arecha. But I also know that I must take the reins of my existence. If I want something out of life, I must take ownership over who I am, what I am, and do the best to my ability to make things happen. You know, sometimes religion is a dangerous thing. Because sometimes, you know what religion allows people to do? It allows them to cop out. It allows them to say, God will provide. You know how many people walk around with a exterior of piety, but it's really just laziness. It's not piety to say that God is, of course, God always helps. HaKadosh Baruch Hu always helps. But when you ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to help, what that also requires is, what are you doing? What are you doing for you? What are you doing for your life? What are you doing for your challenges? How are you making your life better? How are you addressing the things that are broken? How are you taking up the reins and trying to make a quantifiable difference in who you are, what you are, and how you live? Then and only then do I have the right to say, God will provide. I've done my piece. I've done my piece. What more could I do than my hishtadlus? Kadosh Baruch Hu, you pick up where my reach ends. But at the end of the day, David HaMelech teaches us, Ashacharecha. Don't take the theological cop out and say, oh, God will. If God wants it to happen, then it'll happen. That is true. If God wants it to happen, it absolutely will happen. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu put us in this world to engage in a synergistic partnership with Him. We're partners with God. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to us, you do your part and then I will do mine. I don't have to finish the job. I have to start it, right? As the Mishnah Abba says, Lo alecha amalacha ligmar. I don't have to finish it, but I also cannot absent myself from the process of human effort. David HaMelech, in that moment, when it is most tempting to give up, almost has like that Yaakov Avinu epiphany. Yaakov Avinu reminds us. Remember again, David HaMelech is an enekol of Yaakov. I mean, we're all enekolach of Yaakov Avinu. But remember again, David HaMelech comes from the Shevet of Yehuda, the fourth son of Leah Imenu, the son that really solidifies Leah Imenu. Remember again, with the birth of Yehuda to Leah Imenu becomes the dominant wife, right? Remember again, even though, we're going to speak about this more in tonight's Parsha Shir, but even though again, she was not the chosen wife, right? She was the dominant wife. Leah Imenu is the mother to Kahuna, to Shevet Levi, and to Yehuda, to Malchus, right? The major tribes come from Leah Imenu. It's an incredible, incredible thing. In that moment when he's sitting in the cave of Midbar Yehuda, and David HaMelech must have been ready just to give up and throw in the towel, because life has become so difficult. He remembers one simple verse. Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva, vayelech charana. I'm no different than the Zayda. The Zayda also was essentially kicked out of the company. His mother essentially kicked him out. Rivka said, get out, because otherwise, Yaakov Avinu, my Zayda was also kicked out of the house. Had to leave the comfort and security of the family home. Lost everything he knew. Remember again, Yaakov Avinu never again sees his beloved mother. Right? Rivka dies. Right? Remember, Rivka's death is not mentioned explicitly in the Torah. It's only alluded to with the death of her servant, of Devorah, right? But ultimately, again, Yaakov never sees his mother again. You know that relationship that was there between Yaakov and his mother. When he left home, he never saw her again. He sees his father afterwards, but he never sees his mother. Relationship with his brother forever fractured. Life for Yaakov Avinu became one difficult saga from the moment he left his home. Nothing was ever easy for the rest of his life. But yet Yaakov Avinu also understood, anything and everything I need to meet the challenges of life is already inside of me. In that moment in the cave of Midbar Yehuda, when David HaMelech is ready to give up, he says, Elohim, God, where are you? Keliata, you're my God, why aren't you happening? And then in that moment, one word, one epiphany, Ashacharecha. The truth is, I free you from responsibility. If things are going to change, I have to take the reins. If things are going to change, I have to take responsibility. And what was true for Yaakov, and what was true for David is certainly true for us. We all have challenges in life. We all have things that are broken. And the greatest mistake we make in life is that we outsource our success to others. There's something broken in my life, and I'll tell you exactly who has to fix it. Right? You have to fix it, and you have to fix it because you broke it, and you weren't nice to me, and you should have done this, you should have done that. So I have a list of people who have wronged me and who are responsible for breaking stuff in me and in my life, and it's now your job to fix it. Do you know what happens when you wait for other people to fix the things that are broken in your life? It's like sometimes when you ask loved ones to fix things around the house, right? So, okay, sure, I'll get to it. And then there comes a certain point in time where you say, you know what, thank you, I'm not even going to ask anymore. I'm going to call someone to get the job done. When you wait for other people to fix stuff, generally it doesn't happen. If there's something broken in your life, now some things can't be repaired by me, that's true. Some things can only be repaired by others. But there are enough things that are broken inside of me, enough things that are broken inside of my life, that I could roll up my sleeves and I could fix. It's time to stop waiting for God to fix the problems. And it's time to stop waiting for others to fix the problems. And it's time to cultivate within ourselves a little bit of Yaakov Avinu, David HaMelech courage. Ashacharecha, I free everyone else from fixing that which is broken in my life. And I take the responsibility onto myself. And the moment we take that responsibility to fix the things that are broken is the moment that we are one step closer to Mirza Hashem fixing them. I'll stop here. Thank you. Thank you.